Christianity 101. And the reason why I call it Christianity 101 is because the church in Colossae had become a church, but they really didn't have all the answers they needed to be a church. So Paul writes these people that he's never met, but he has a love for them because he has a love for all of God's people. And he tries to correct some things that are going on, and he tries to give them some focus about how to walk this walk with Jesus. And in doing so, he gives them some basic theology, and then he starts getting into the practical side of life. And one of the things he's going to be talking about today is work. He is giving us the theology of work. The scripture that was read for you just a minute ago, I want you to look back at that because I want you to underline some things. In the very first verse, it says, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters." I want you to underline these two words, "in everything." In everything. Because there's a tendency for us, when we have a boss, when we have somebody that's over us, we will obey them in some things, but not everything. He goes on to say, do it not only when their eye is on you. Underline those words, not only when their eye is on you, because we have a tendency to only be working when our boss is watching us. I worked for a retailer one time, and it was funny, when they knew the big dogs were coming in, we cleaned better than we ever cleaned before. Everybody was in their place, and everybody looked busy whether they were busy or not, because the big boss was coming in. So that's a tendency that we have. And then I want you to go down to verse 23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, and underline these words, as working for the Lord. And then in verse 24, it says, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, underline this next sentence, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Masters, provide for your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you have a master in heaven. You see, back in those days, job opportunities were a little different. You were probably born into doing something because of where you lived or who your parents were. You did not have the flexibility that we have today. In my parents' generation, most of the people went to work for a company and retired with that same company. Today, it is completely different. My son has a good job, but he is always looking for the next best thing. And you know, people today, they move and they transfer to other parts of the country, and they're all going after a better job. And this whole idea of work-life balance has become a big thing, and people are looking for the next paycheck. What's going to give them the most satisfaction? What's going to benefit them the most long-term? And work is still just as important today as it was back then. Now, some people think work is a four-letter word. I'm not one of them. I was born genetically inclined to work. I think my mom and dad, when they had me, something in my DNA just said, hey, I want to go out and create. I want to go out and work. I never minded working. As a matter of fact, I still cut my own grass. And I edge, and I trim, and I do all of that. I had a neighbor, my next-door neighbor, ask me the other day, said, Neil, I see you out working in the yard. Why do you still do that? And I said, because I'm not as old as you yet. Point being, I enjoy that. I like looking at my finished yard. I like looking at what I was able to create with a lawnmower, an edger, and a weed whacker, and a bush trimmer. But there are other people that don't feel the same way about work. As a matter of fact, I had a construction company at one time, and I've had different employees from time to time, and I've had some people that were just like me. They love to work. You'd give them a job to do, and then 10 minutes later, they'd be back, and they'd say, I'm finished. What do you have next for me? And then I had other people in that I employed, and it was, they spent more time trying to figure out how to get out of work than they did working. And of course, they didn't stay employed with me very long. But I remember particularly one guy, he was trying to figure out how to do work better, and I told him to paint a door. And I guess I should have supervised him a little better, but his idea was painting the door was to pour paint on it and then slosh it around a little bit. And then when he picked the door up, it all ran. And so I had to buy a new door. But the thing of it is we all have been created to work. Now I will say this. I am created one way, and Nancy's created a different way. She likes her leisure a little bit more than I like my leisure. Not that she doesn't work, because she's here, and she's hearing what I'm saying. I said something about that in the first service and forgot that she was in the nursery and they had speakers. So I'm in the doghouse now. But we're all different. But God's got something in here for all of us. Number one, work is not a curse. It is a blessing. Work is not a curse. It is a blessing. Look what it says there. Just underline this in verse 28. God bless them. Underline those words. God bless them. And when he blessed them, he said to them, be fruitful. Underline those words. Be fruitful. Be productive and increase in number. Fill the earth. And underline these words. Subdue it. And then the second thing, rule over it. You see, we were created by a creator. And we were made in his image. And he creates, therefore we should create. And we need to understand that. You know, some people think that when we get to heaven, it's going to be like being on a Caribbean cruise. We think we're going to get to heaven, we're going to drink Mai Tais and eat all we want and sit around and just have a big time. It's going to be vacation. Let me change that for you a little bit. In heaven, I believe we're going to work. Revelations chapter 22 and verse 3. You don't have it in your notes. You can put it in there. It says that his servants will serve him. His servants will serve him. I think God's got something planned for us in heaven, and it's not going to be going around on fluffy clouds playing harps. It's not what it's going to be. And I'm going to tell you this. When Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go to that place, I'm going to come back and get you, this place that he's prepared for us on earth, can you imagine how great heaven's going to be? It is going to be beyond our expectations. You do not need to be scared of heaven at all. What you need to be scared of is hell. So, work is not a curse, it's a blessing. Number two, every job has some parts that stink. Every job has some parts that stink. Now, if you were a farmer back then, the thing that stunk was the weeds, the thorns and the thistles that came up with it. If you're a builder, one of the things that stinks is a building inspector. I have the best job in the whole world. I work one day a week, and it's only for a few hours. But there are still some parts of my job that stink. And I'm going to just tell you, it's elders' meetings. I do not like elders' meetings. We have them often, and every time we have one, I think, how long is this going to last? They bring in snacks and drinks, and sometimes Monty Betts brings in a pillow so he can camp out. It's just not a good thing. Now, I am joking, but I do think that elders' meetings should be standing meetings only because they're all old. They'll get tired quick and we can go home. We have an elders' meeting coming up on the 8th. I would ask that you pray for me because I am going to be getting beat up so bad. And I'm joking. I really don't find that. But every job has something to stink. And I think sometimes people think work is a curse because of what happened in Genesis 3. It says to Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate of the fruit from the tree about which I commanded you must not eat from it. Look at what it says. Cursed is the ground because of you. We are not cursed. The ground was cursed. Now, that means there's going to be some problems for us. It goes on down in verse 19, by the sweat of your brow you will eat your food. Every job, no matter how good it is, has some part in it that stinks. When I was doing construction, there were three things that I hated doing. Number one, I hated doing drywall. I did it from time to time, but I would rather hire it to be done. The other thing that I hated was I hated painting. I still hate painting with a passion. Every time I see a paintbrush and a paint can, I get a little sick feeling in my stomach because it's never right. And the third thing that I hated is I hated cleaning up after the job was done because I always wanted it to be cleaned up perfectly. So what did I do? I hired somebody to do those three jobs because every job has something in it that stinks. The third thing I want you to know, we don't have jobs as much as we have a ministry. We don't have jobs as much as we have a ministry. You need to understand that you were put on this earth as an ambassador for Christ. You are here on an assignment. In other words, you have a ministry assignment when you're going to work. Think of it this way. Think of a spy. He goes to a foreign land and he tries to blend in and learn what's going on around him. But his ultimate boss is not the boss he's working for here. His ultimate boss is the country that he came from. And you need to see yourself not as a spy, but as somebody that is here on an assignment. Look at what it says here in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 17. Whatever you do, whether word or deed, underline these words. Do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus. And he goes on to say, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And then verse 23 and 24, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart. Underline those words. With all of your heart as working for the Lord. If you're going to work tomorrow and Nancy works at MetLife, she doesn't really work for MetLife. She works for the Lord. And the problem is with a lot of us is we feel like that we're working for somebody else and we forget that we're working for the Lord. Now, several years ago, back when I was going to college, I worked for a paper plant. And that paper plant was called Bowaters. And if you've ever been around a paper plant, it stinks, okay? But I worked construction there, and that was the way I was paying for college. I worked there in the summer, and then when I came home for Christmas break, I immediately went to work. I called my boss, and before I ever got home good, I had a job. I wouldn't even take a day off before arriving home and going to work the next day. And because of that, even after Nancy and I got married, for 5 or 6 years, I did not spend Christmas Day with Nancy. You see, at Bowaters, when they shut down over the Christmas holidays, it cost them $1 million a day to be shut down. And so when they shut down for the Christmas holidays, we had to get all the work that we had to get done in those two-week periods. Now, you would say, but you got married and you didn't spend time with your wife? I was making triple time on Christmas Day. And one day, I worked 21 hours on one day. It was an easy job. But the reason why I did it is because of the reward. I want you to look at this verse. Since you know you will receive an inheritance as a reward, there is your motivation for working and doing your work heartily. Now, I could stop right there, and that's the theology of work. But because we're talking about work, I've got to put in my time, so I've got some more here. So let's look at this. When you're not the boss, you know, first of all, I want to say this to you. If you're a Christian, you should be your company's most valuable employee. You should be the star employee. No matter what it is you're doing, you should be number one. You should have the best work ethic, and you should outshine everybody. Not because you're smarter than everybody, but because of who your real boss is. When I was growing up, and went to Freed Hardeman, one of the things they said is that most of the people that will graduate from Freed Hardeman will find placement in no time because the school was known for turning out educated and morally equipped people that worked hard. And whenever anybody hires us, they should see our Christian light in that. So, the first thing you need to do is do what you were hired to do. It says, obey your earthly masters in everything. Obey your earthly masters in everything. I looked that word up, and that word everything there in the Greek means everything. It doesn't mean in some things, because there are times that you just don't want to do everything they require you to do. In letter A, every time, in every way. You see, sometimes we think the little things that we're asked to do are not that important, so we don't do them that well. And we'll let things slide that we're asked to do. But it says here, obey your earthly masters in everything and do it. That's what it says next, and do it. And letter B, if it's sinful, don't do it. If it's sinful, don't do it. And the reason why I say that, because in my careers, not obviously not here at church, but in my career, there's been a few times where people have asked me to do things that I knew were not right. They were sinful. And I wouldn't do it. And you need to keep that in mind. Now, here's the next letter, C. If it's stupid, do it well. Now, you're laughing, but as soon as I walked in the door this morning, Joel says, Neil, I got a question for you. He says, if it's stupid, you do it well. What do you mean by that? Well, here's the thing. Right before Nancy and I got married, I had to have a job because I figured out real quick that you cannot live on love. As much as I wanted to, it just didn't work. I got a job at a factory that made jeans. And what I did is I showed up and I took jeans that had been made and put in boxes. And I would take the jeans out of the boxes, and all morning long I would take jeans out of the boxes and I would size them and I would put them on a shelf, just like that, all morning long. And then I would take lunch. And after lunch, I would go to those shelves and I would take jeans off the shelves and put them in boxes. Now, some of you are way ahead of me right now and you realize how stupid that is. But I know there had to be a reason behind it. But I got to tell you this, I worked 1 week and put my notice in because I could not stand the insanity of what I was doing. But the whole time I was there, guess what? When I left, the boss told me, you are the best person we have ever hired. Why are you leaving? And I said, I have a better opportunity elsewhere, which meant I was still looking for another job. If it's stupid, do it well. And I want you to see that when it comes to being an employee, we need to be the best employee that we have. And that brings me to point number two, have a great attitude And I got beside that, fake it till you make it. Fake it until you make it. Because I got to tell you, it's not easy to wake up with a good attitude every morning, is it? Shake your head, yes. Some of you have a bad attitude right now, I can tell. But you can fake it until you make it. And you say, well, Neil, that's hypocritical. If we don't feel good about something, we shouldn't be faking it, should it? No. Listen to me. I was talking to my buddy Jay today, and Jay was telling me that he's not getting a lot of sleep at night because he's got a new baby at his house. And I'm going to tell you this. When we had children and they started crying in the middle of the night, and I punched Nancy to wake her up so she could go take care of them, she didn't want to get up and go do that. And of course I didn't. But you know what? We got up and did it anyway. And one of the things that I always remember when we got up with our kids is from the time we hit the floor until the time we got to that baby, things changed. Because we didn't want to get up, but as soon as we saw that child, we faked it, and then we loved on it. You fake it until you make it. You got to have a good attitude. Colossians 3:27 in the English Standard Version, whatever you do, and underline these words, work heartily. Work heartily. And here's the thing, you know, some people say, Neil, you don't understand. You don't know what it's like to have my job. I'm like, no, I don't know what it's like to have your job. And you don't know what it's like to have my job. So here's what I got to tell you. Letter A, if you can find a better job, take it. If you can find a better job, take it. Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let that trouble you, although you can gain if you can gain freedom, do so. If you don't like your job, it's a miserable job, and you need to find something else, if you find something else, take it. But I want to say this. A lot of times, people think that better jobs and more money are the same thing. Mm-mm. I have seen people who have been in great jobs and had a good lifestyle and then went after the money and they end up working and losing their family. I've seen one guy in particular, he's been gone several years from now. He called me up. He had taken a job and it put him somewhere in North Carolina and his kids were here. He was happy here. His wife was happy here. But he got this job opportunity and it was going to be more money. And he moved away. And after 3 or 4 years of moving away, he called me and he says, Neil, I messed up when I moved. I said, what do you mean? He says, we lost a church family and we haven't been able to find that. And I work more now than I've ever worked before, and I don't get to spend time with my family like I wanted to. That whole idea of work-life balance is so good. And if you're like me and you like to work and you bury yourself in work, you need to really kind of balance that. And if you're like other people in my family who don't like to work as much, not my wife, I am so much trouble. But if you're like that and you would rather have leisure than work, maybe you need to balance to the other side. Here's the point I'm trying to make to you. Is a better job and better money not always the same thing? But if you can find a better job that will give you more freedom to do what God wants you to do, whether it's raising your family, working with the church, or volunteering someplace, make sure you take it. If you can't find a better job, thank God for the one you have. Thank God for the one you have. Look at what it says, Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do, whether word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus. And he adds this tagline, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And I want you to understand something. Don't turn the page yet. Please stay on that page because I want you to underline giving thanks to God the Father through him. Nancy works for a large corporation. One of the things that I have noticed working, that while she's working for a large corporation, is there's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of bad attitudes. And on top of all that, guess what? There's some gossip going on. And if you spend 40 hours a week with negativity and bad attitudes and gossip, guess what happens to you? And the only way to combat that negative attitude and gossip and bad attitudes is to thank God. You see, when you thank God for what you have, it changes you. It doesn't change God. God didn't say thank you. You need to say thank you to me because I'm so great. And he's not up there in heaven being all egotistical. When he says you need to thank God, he is saying you need to do that for your sake. And a lot of times we get so in tune what's wrong with our life, what's wrong with the country, what's wrong with the city, what's wrong with TV, that we forget to thank God. And we, before we know it, we have become negative and we've become pessimistic and we've become hard to live with. Amen? So we need to thank God. Okay, now you can turn the page. Let's, now that we're all unified here. Number three, pursue excellence. Reject good enough. My buddy Randy Adams, he's passed now, but he would come over to my house and help me with some things. I would come over to his house and help him with things. I remember one time I was helping him replace the roof, and he started to fall, and I was on the ground, and I started to catch him, and then I realized he weighed twice as much as me, and I just stepped back. I figured he'd bounce and I'd catch him off the first bounce. But the thing of it is, Randy and I had a good time together. But one of the things he would do to me, whenever we were working together at my house, he would finish and he would look at me. He said, you know, it's good enough for who it's for. There's another favorite saying of his. He would do something and I would say, you know, that doesn't look right. Maybe we fix it. He'd look at me and he said, Neil, we're not building a church. One day he was in here working at the church. And I said, you need to fix that right there. And he says, we're not, oh, we are building a church. Now, I want you to understand that pursuing excellence is not perfection. Now, Austin's not in here, but I said this to him in the first service. Austin is pursuing excellence because every time he speaks, he's trying to improve himself. And that's what it means. It doesn't mean perfection, but trying to do better. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not human masters. Letter A, this is for the younger people particularly. Work like what you want to be paid. Work like what you want to be paid. In other words, do more than you're paid for. We have our first service, our song leader actually works for Office Depot, and I was talking about Staples this morning and telling him about, well, I told everybody about going to Staples. Back when I first started with his church many, many years ago, one of the things I had to do on Saturday night is I had to put the bulletin together and the sermon notes. And so I would take it to Staples and I would make copies for Sunday morning and making all the copies and everything. And I met a lot of nice people doing that because I came in about the same time on Saturday and people have pretty much the same schedule. Well, there's this one young lady that I came in and I was making my copies, and I got to tell you, have you ever seen one of those people that just looked like they got up in the morning and they had sour grapes for breakfast? I mean, she just looked like she was miserable. And you know me, I can't handle misery. I am here to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, and she looked afflicted. And I wanted to make her happy, so I would try to make her smile. I told Jan Blackwell dad jokes, trying to make her smile. And it didn't work. It didn't work. I tried everything I could do to make her happy, and I couldn't do it. And after about 2 months, I couldn't stand it anymore. And I walked in there. She had that same sour disposition. She didn't act like she was wanting to be there and all that. And I looked at her and I said, you know, I've been coming in here for a while, and you just look so unhappy. Why are you so unhappy? And she said, because they don't pay me enough. And I said, well, work like you want to work. What, like you want to get paid. Work like you want to get paid and see if it doesn't come along. I said, that's what's happened in my life. And she just turned her head and walked away. And I said, but if you don't do that, you're going to find yourself at McDonald's asking, do you want fries with that? Well, she didn't take my advice. 2 weeks later, she was gone. And I'm not a prophet, but guess where I found her? At McDonald's, taking money. And I didn't say a word. I just smiled and said, it's good to see you again. And she didn't last there very long either. So work like you want to be paid. Letter B, remember God is using you no matter what work you are doing. God's using you no matter what work you are doing. There's a young man that was in the first service today, and he and I met at Cracker Barrel under a divine appointment. You see, every time you go out into the world, God's got work for you to do. The question is do you recognize the work that He has for you to do? And I think for most of us, we're oblivious to the fact that God is using us to do His work. I go into Cracker Barrel. There's a young lady there by the name of Betty. I say young lady, she's probably my age. And she just loves me. And one of the things that she does is whenever I walk in and she sees me, and I try to sneak around her because it's a little embarrassing, there'll be a line of people waiting to check out, and she will stop the line and say, hold on a minute. Jesus just came in the room. Betty, I'm not Jesus. She says, no, but I've been praying for somebody to come in, and God sent you. She comes up and she hugs me. The funniest thing that ever happened is when Nancy and I went in there together, Betty comes around. I said, Betty, this is my wife. You can't be hugging on me. And she looks at Nancy. She says, when you're not here, we're going, mm-mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. But one day, I walked in, and Betty was doing her thing. And this guy was standing there, and he was going through a hard time. And he called the church office the next day because I gave him a pen, wanting to talk to me. That was 2 months ago, and he was in the first service this morning. You see, whatever it is you're doing, God has a plan to use you if you'll let Him. And you need to remember you have a divine appointment because you have a ministry assignment. I want you to write these words down because I think they are so good. Every day is an audition for tomorrow. Every day is an audition for tomorrow. What you're doing today is either going to pay negative dividends or positive dividends in your life. What you're doing today is an audition for tomorrow. Well, if you're in here and you're a boss, and I know we got some bosses in here, I'm not going to point anybody out, but you know who you are. It says, masters, provide for your slave with what is right and fair, because you know that you have a master in heaven. Number one, you are to create a work environment that is both just and fair. That's both just and fair. And I've got in your notes here, fair does not mean equal. Somehow in this society, we think everybody's got to have the same thing all the time. No, we do not. There are some people that are more educated, or some people that are more skilled. There are some people that have a better work ethic than others. And wherever you are in that, you need to understand that's where you are. And if you want to get paid more, you need to work like you're getting paid more. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 28 says, love and faithfulness keeps a king safe. Through love, his throne is made secure. Solomon wrote that to his son, who obviously didn't pay attention. Within 2 hours, he went from the 12 tribes to 2 tribes. But what he's saying here is, put your employees first. And if you put your employees first and you're dependable, then you are going to be successful in your job. Have you ever thought, and I know some of you in here are too young to even know about the Pony Express, but, you know, there's people in here like Monty Betts that, you know, actually got mail from the Pony Express. Yeah, he was riding horses. But, you know, the thing about the Pony Express is they would get on their horses and they would ride their horses and they would deliver the mail. But one of the most important things of that job was not delivering the mail. The most important thing about that job was taking care of the horses. Because if you didn't take care of the horses, you didn't get to where you were going, and the mail stacked up. Same thing holds true for us today. If we don't take care of our employees and we don't take care of people, we are going to have our mail stack up. Number two, treat your subordinates as you want God to treat you. Treat your subordinates as you would want God to treat you. That is so important in every aspect of our life. If we treat others as we want God to treat us, you know, it's the golden rule. It'll make our life that much better. Well, that's all I've got. I'm done with work today. How about you? Everywhere you go this afternoon, I want you to think about the fact that you have a divine appointment. If you're like me and you're going to go out to eat and grab something, you have a divine appointment with the people you're going to meet. If you've got to go to the grocery store this afternoon, you have a divine appointment with the people you're going to meet. If you're in your neighborhood, you have a divine appointment with the people in your neighborhood. Whoever you are, wherever you go today, remember that God is using you. We sing an invitation song each Lord's Day, and that invitation song is a chance for you to make right your life with God. Wherever you are in your walk with God today, as we sing this song, like Mark says, let's not check the box. Let's sing the song and check our hearts instead of the box. The lesson is yours as we stand and sing.